Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate you being with us this morning. My name is Bruce Dickey. This is the Bruce Dickey Show. My new friend across the way is my guest this morning is Judge James R. Randy Moore. He's one of the 5th District Appellate Court judges, and he's also running for your seat for a seat in the. How does that work? Now that you're already a judge, did someone already retire that got you the spot, or how's that going?
Well, the position that I'm in now is a circuit judge assigned to the appellate court.
Oh, okay.
So you're still a circuit judge?
Still actually
a circuit judge, but I'm on temporary assignment to the appellate court by assignment by the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So it is at the pleasure and discretion of the Supreme Court that I continue to serve.
And you're running for Jim Wexton's seat, as I understand, correct?
Correct.
Okay, but you're not currently filling Wexton's seat, even though you're assigned to the appellate court.
Correct.
I'm kind of surprised by that. And there's another contest on the other side. Is the other contest to fill the seat that you're in now?
And no, it is to fill the seat of Bruce Stewart, who is retiring.
Okay. All right. I'm confused entirely.
Even those of us involved sometimes have to.
So whose seat are you in?
I'm in the seat that Judge Spomer had.
Judge Spomer retired?
Yes. Okay. He retired at the end of 2014. And so to replace him at the end of 2014, I was appointed by the Supreme Court.
I'll be doggone. That's pretty good. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Judge Randy Moore, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Well, thank
Judge.
You. Good to be here,
appreciate you being here. Tell me about yourself. Tell me and everybody else about yourself.
Well, first of all, I am from Carterville.
Uh-huh.
I was born and raised there. I'm fifth generation Carterville.
Oh,
and I
really?
Live in the same place, actually, that my great-grandfather settled when he came to Carterville. He was a Civil War veteran.
No kidding.
And he bought a farm there, and I don't live in the same house, but I live in the same spot.
Is that
he
really?
Purchased, and he was a GAR member and a Civil War veteran and a German immigrant. And
no
so
kidding.
I'm in the same place.
How in the world did the name stay Moore? Was it
M-O-H-R
before it?
It was on my grandmother's side.
Oh, I see.
My grandmother, Moore. And her maiden name was Phillips, and so her grandfather's name was Henry Phillips.
I see.
So this is the Henry Phillips farm that I still am on.
Where did he fight? Do you know? Or have
he
you...
was in a New Jersey regiment.
I didn't know if
and
you
so
looked.
He...
I didn't know if you looked far enough back into
yes,
it. Knew
yes.
anything about that?
Yeah, he was in a New Jersey regiment, and he is in the early history books of the history of Williamson County as one of the early settlers of the town, and so we go back several generations, and I have several extended cousins that we count, probably like Wayne County.
Yeah, you know, I suspect that's I suspect,
second, third, and fourth cousins.
I suspect it's kind of similar, huh?
Yes.
Okay, now, so you've lived there all your life. You've grown up in Carterville. Tell me about your family. You're growing up, if you're on the same site, is it a farm? Did you grow up as a young farmer, or was your family in business?
My dad worked at Crab Orchard Refuge.
Oh, really?
And my mom went back to college at the same time I did. Nobody in my family had ever gone to college. And, yes, we did live on a farm on the edge of town and raise cattle. And we had about 25 head. It was my job to put up all the hay and to feed the cattle. And I actually helped my dad build the fences. So originally, when he was a World War II veteran, when he got out of the war, he fenced off a 40 acres that he and my grandmother had acquired. And
that became pasture?
There was a railroad track that was abandoned, and he bought a mule and went into the took those railroad ties and hauled them on a mule and carried them around that 40 acres and dug holes by hand and used those
that was his
railroad
post?
Ties as fence posts and fenced in that 40 acres by hand.
And that was when you were having to help him?
No, this was before I was born. This was in the late 40s.
I was going to say, as growing up, you'd have been a pretty strong kid to be able to throw around some.
You know, I did not have to work. I did not have to fence with railroad ties like he did, but I do have a couple of spots where some of that fence still exists.
I was going to say that's got to still be standing.
There's some of it that still stands.
Because with those creosote railroad ties, they last forever. They don't go away.
No.
We'll put it that way. That's really cool. Okay, so you decided you didn't want to follow into the family business, which would have been helping run the preserve, the refuge down there. You decided to become. What made you want to become an attorney? When did you realize you wanted to become an attorney?
It's kind of funny that you asked that, Bruce, because I always thought I was going to be a lawyer from as long ago as I can remember.
You remember arguing or something? Or
yes, I remember. I remember in church, some of the kids I was in church with saying, "You need to be a lawyer because you can argue with anyone."
Well, so you must have won from time to time the arguments.
Well, I thought so.
We were talking, I think, right before we went on the air that...
Thank you for wearing pants, by the way.
Hey, yeah, I'm glad to do it. I'm glad to help out. Glad to help out. I'm glad to make you feel welcome. Let's put it that way. We were talking a little bit about you've been in the business, the attorney in business, let's call it that, for 40 years. And you're a young man. At what, 62?
Yes. Wait, almost 40.
How old were you when you graduated from high school?
17.
Did you go to Carterville High School?
Yes, I went to Carterville all 12 years except one that I went to Murfreesboro. And so basically in those days, like people I say, weren't that mobile. And most of the kids that I started in kindergarten with, we graduated from high school.
Oh, that's cool.
Together.
Well, it's a 7-year process to become an attorney. Yes. Or at least it is now. How did you become an attorney?
Well, I did it in six. And I was 17 when I graduated from high school, so I actually took the bar exam at 23.
Where'd you go to school?
I was in the second class at SIU whenever it was started as a new law school.
Where'd you go? Undergrad there, too?
Or? Yes. Economics, BA in 74.
Holy moly. Okay, so you are a Saluki through and through.
Yes.
You a big Barry Hinson fan?
I don't really know him, but...
I didn't know if you liked the basketball.
Yes, I like basketball, but I'm busy on the campaign trail, so I've not been keeping up to...
Yeah, much. I suspect. I suspect. Well, I have a friend who's a SIU grad, undergrad, and law school as well, and yeah, he's a nut when it comes to Barry Hinson. He loves him. He just thinks he's the best.
Well, I'd say he's very popular, yes.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the family, about your family.
Well, let me tell you first about my mom and dad. I mentioned that my mom went back to school at college the same time I did. So she was 39 when she went to college. Nobody in my family on either my mom or my dad's side had ever gone to college before, and she and I were in college at the same time, and she graduated in probably about 73 and then started teaching at Elkville.
I say she wasn't gonna be in pre-law.
No, but my mom was a really good student, and she taught English and French at Elkville then for 20 years until she retired. She passed away last year.
How big a family did you have?
And I just have one sister who's about 10 years younger. Much prettier,
and they always are.
And we're very close. She lives in Carterville, San Diego.
Oh, really?
But her heart is still in Carterville, and she thinks it's Southern Illinois is pure paradise. Even though she lives in San Diego, which you don't get any better weather than that. But
no.
She still thinks she'd love to move back if she could.
And you, one of the first things out of your mouth, pretty much any time you meet people, you mentioned it to me when we were on the phone within 5 minutes, and you mentioned it to Lynn here within the first 2 or 3 minutes, you have 8 children.
Yes.
you must tell me about your saint of a wife.
Well, my wife is one of the hardest working people I know.
Yeah.
And she does all that.
What's her name?
Cindy.
Okay.
We've been married 41 years, and she is an excellent homemaker, and she is artistic. She's a great decorator. She can do anything. She homeschooled the kids until we had some real problems with my health and a house fire. This all went on without any hitch or trouble.
How about that?
And so that all those difficulties happened in 2004, and I'll tell those
if you like. I mean, it's not that it's
well. We had a mix of tragedies happen. We had our home burn.
Yeah,
no one was hurt, but they were home doing a graduation party.
Oh no!
For one of my daughters, and the smoke alarm went off, and turned out the house was on fire. And so we had to move out while it was being repaired. And at that time, I came down with acute kidney failure.
Oh, dear.
And was very, very ill and had to go on dialysis for a year.
Did you get a donation?
And so 10 and a half years ago, I had a kidney transplant.
Who did you know the donor?
Yes. A friend from church gave me a kidney. And so
that's a pretty nice gift, isn't it?
It is. Greater love has no man
than
a man lay down his life for a friend.
I would agree wholeheartedly. I'm talking to Judge James R. Randy Moore of the 5th District Appellate Court. He is running for his seat on the 5th District Appellate Court. We're going to talk more about his family. We're basically getting to know the judge, and we'll talk about his family and his attorney and career. When we come back here on the Bruce Dickey Show after these, you are listening on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield. Back in a sec.
It was Della and a dealer and a dog named Jake and a cat named Kalamazoo. Left the city in a pickup truck, gonna make some dreams come true. Yeah, he rolled out west with a wild sunsets in the Coyote Basin canoe. Della and the dealer and a dog named Jake and a cat named Kalamazoo. That cat could talk. Said a mumbling word. Down Tucson way there's a small cafe where they play a little cowboy tune. And the guitar picker was a friend of mine by the name of Randy Boone. Yeah, Randy played her a sweet love song and Della got a fire in her eyes. The dealer had a knife and the dog had a gun and the cat had a shot of rye.
Good morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. My guest across the way is Judge James R. Randy Moore. And all right, now your James R. was your dad James too? Is that why you're called Randy or what?
Yes, my dad was Jim Moore.
Okay.
And my mom and dad thought they'd call me Randy and change my name and start calling me James R. or Jim
whenever you got in trouble?
Whenever I got older. Well, what my mom didn't realize was that you don't change your name in your hometown.
No, it's once it starts, you're stuck.
No, you don't change your name in your hometown.
okay, well, you were talking before we got away. You were talking about you had your house caught fire.
Yes.
And you had to rebuild. That's a pretty nice little trying time for everybody.
Oh, it was very difficult. And I didn't realize I was so sick. For any of those out there in the medical community, when I finally went into the doctor, I had a creatinine level of 16. And my doctor told me that he had never seen a level like that in anybody that was alive.
Wow. Congratulations for being for winning the Guinness Book of World Records there, Randy. That's pretty good. Okay, so this is 12 years. What kind of age range are your kids?
My oldest is 37,
okay.
And my youngest is 20.
Where are they? Are they all in Carterville? Are they all around Southern Illinois, or have they spread out as they?
My oldest daughter lives in Macon, Georgia. She has four children, and she married a young man from Hillsboro.
Okay.
And he has a PhD, and he is a teacher. And my second...
I'm not going to make you go down the whole list.
Well,
you...
okay, I can. I know you.
Well, you're proud of him, I'm sure.
Sure. And I can even... Actually, I think I can even pass a test and give you their birth dates.
Hey, how about that? That's not bad. With eight of them.
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot of kids. That's in this day and age. People yes. don't usually have families that large.
No, but that's been my life. Yeah. I love my children. I love my grandchildren.
Did either you or your, well, I know you said you only have you have a sister. Did your wife come up from a big family too?
Yes, she did. She's one of eight, and then she has three half-siblings, so she's actually one of 11.
Yeah, that's, when you see big families these mm-hmm. days, with average being only two or fewer kids of a family, it seems like they've come from a large family. It just that's very interesting. Okay, so you had to work hard as an attorney, pretty much with eight kids. You're going to have to. You've got mouths to feed.
I had a lot of mouths to feed, and I worked hard. I
Tell
practiced
me about
law as a solo practitioner in my hometown for 28 years.
And you had an office there in Carterville.
Yes.
Solo practitioner doing what? Meaning you were handling somebody's will on one side and then handling somebody else's title insurance on the other side.
Yes.
Deed. And then handling your other neighbors, your next door neighbor's kid breaking into somebody's house on the other side, right?
I had just about everything you can name. There wasn't much I didn't do. And, spent a lot of time just counseling people.
Really?
People would stop by the office. I mean, I grew up there. I knew a lot of people and tried to help people wherever I could and tried not to be overly expensive.
What was your favorite? Well, see, now that's good. That's good that you weren't trying to, like, take advantage of
No, I tried to make a living. I tried to bill for my time, but I tried not to gouge people.
What was your toughest, what was the most interesting thing to you of your 28 years as a solo practitioner like that?
Oh, the most interesting case I handled that you bring up was a case. It takes a little while to tell this story, but I'll try to tell it in the short version.
We're okay.
In Franklin County, Orient, the city of Orient, hired me to help them get a sewer plant built.
Okay.
They hired a contractor that claimed it couldn't be built. He had some problems with water. He encountered wet conditions, and then he basically pulled out and said he couldn't build it.
Where is Orient from Benton?
It is south and...
So near Royalton, or is it east or west?
It is just west of West Frankfort.
Okay.
And so we contacted the bonding company to make good on their bond, and they basically... Said no.
And I was going to put it a different way. It sounded like they told you to go stick it or something like that.
Well, you could say that, yes.
Yeah.
And so I engaged in some somewhat measured correspondence at the beginning, and then it became more sharp over time. And I kept thinking, well, this guy is acting really strange, this lawyer on the other side.
Yeah, not really attorney-like, was it?
Well, he just became more belligerent, and so I thought I better do some research. So I went to the law library and read a book, and it turned out the guy that I was dealing with had written this book.
Oh, really?
And then it turned out the guy I was dealing with was in a law firm that occupied most of an entire floor of the Sears Tower, and I found out I was up against quite a bit of power and a law firm that had a lot of resources. And here I'm this one man office.
So you see that you see the addresses on his correspondence to
yes.
you. You see like it's 200 Lower Wacker Drive or something like
well,
that.
Well,
you don't think, hey, you know, that's around the Sears Tower.
Well, I really realized that when we went up to take his deposition, and
yeah.
we went, you know, we our destination was this floor, and this when we got off on this floor, it was this law firm that took up most of that floor. And so this guy that wrote that book, we ended up deposing. And I'll try to cut to the chase.
So he's thinking he knows more than you.
Well, they weren't paying. And Orient wasn't getting their sewer plant built. And so this case went to trial on 9/11.
Oh, no.
On the day of 9/11.
On the date.
Yes.
No kidding.
And the village officials didn't really have a lot to do with all this back and forth with this insurance company.
Right. They were counting on you.
Yes. And so they didn't really know what all had happened. So I ended up doing two things, engaging co-counsel, and then I ended up having to withdraw a day or two before trial so that I could be the main witness for Orient. So I also ended up being deposed for several hours as a witness.
Oh, I see.
And so that was an interesting experience.
Did you win?
We ended up getting everything we had asked
for. How about that?
And this was only after the jury selection had been completed. They tried to get a continuance on 9/11. When this was all happening, it was in the middle of all the carnage that was happening on television.
Yeah.
And so I was...
How are you able to keep people focused?
Well, I was in my office that day because I was not actually in the courtroom.
Right, since you were running...
I was preparing.
Yeah, you were co-counsel at that point.
I was preparing and preparing to testify, and I was preparing, doing some research on some motions. And my co-counsel called me and said, they're trying to continue this case. And I said, we must not allow that. We need this to go forward. So Kyle Vantries was the judge.
Yeah.
And Kyle denied the continuance. And
yeah, that's one thing. Most times for a continuance, both sides have to agree to it typically.
Well, it's up to the judge.
Yeah.
And it is, yeah, a lot of times the judge will go along with a continuance if both parties agree, but in our case we objected, and we did so strenuously because how difficult it was to get this case ready. And, and we had a town here that didn't have a sewage plant, and all this happened. And you know, I've tried to make a long story short, but it was interesting that all that happened and all those twists and turns, and it ended up going to trial on 9/11.
Unlike one of the worst days in the last 50 years.
I mean, it's a day that everyone remembers what they were doing that day.
I had the day off. I was so glad. I was laying around the house. Oh, my gosh.
And it's like we just kept discovering that this kept getting more worse, and we couldn't imagine what was happening to us.
So tell me... you got the jury seated. The full jury? Did they get the
I wasn't there, so I don't know if he actually got them all picked or not.
Is that a point when your two parties, one of them says, I got a bad jury here, let's go ahead and settle?
I think they realized that we weren't backing down.
Yeah.
And that they needed to come through, and they did.
Did you ever hear back from the fellow who was belligerent?
No,
he didn't. He didn't because I mean, you beat him, right? I mean, you beat the guy.
We succeeded. Yes.
All right, see, that's how he's putting it. I like that. I like how you're putting it. What was your as an attorney? What your most interesting, not just interesting case, the most interesting, the most fulfilling part of the job to you?
As a lawyer or as a judge?
As a lawyer. And then we'll get to the judge.
As a lawyer,
we come back, we'll take a break.
As a lawyer, it was helping people accomplish what they set out to do.
Yeah.
And as a lawyer, you are a counselor, and you are there to assist people. You're not there to substitute your desires for theirs.
Yeah.
And so I always tried to accomplish what people asked me to accomplish for them. And, you know, people come in and ask you to evaluate their case, ask you to give advice, ask you to help them accomplish certain goals, and I always tried to do my best. And so I would say helping people accomplish what they were seeking
That's great
is what I was there for.
That's a great answer. I'm talking to Judge James R. Randy Moore. He's a 5th District Appellate Court judge. He's actually that now, but he's also running for a seat as the 5th District Appellate Court judge. November 8 election coming up, and we'll talk more with Judge Moore when we return here on the Bruce Dickey Show. You are listening on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield. Back after these. Good morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. My name is Bruce Dickey. I'm joined across the way by Judge James R. Randy Moore of Carterville. Now, we haven't made clear, by the way, the size of the district. What is the length and breadth of the 5th District?
It's 37 counties. It starts north in Christian County and goes all the way south to Caro, and from river to river, Madison County, Godfrey in the north, and Crawford County on the east, which is Robinson.
As a as an appellate court judge, you've been an appellate court judge now for over a year, year and a half. As an appellate court judge, do you get out or and see any of that, or do you just basically depend on the documents given to you by the attorneys arguing in front of you?
Appellate court decisions are based strictly on the record.
Okay.
So we do not do anything outside of the record.
I did not know if there were the occasions that you that they did send you around, like to see if somebody wanted you to see something in particular.
No. Let me say, though, one of the great values of running for election is when you see a case, if you have been to that town and you have met the people in that area, you have a sense for that place. You have a sense for and a better understanding of that place.
Yeah, that
and that is one of the great values of electing judges.
That makes
the people are electing the magistrates that are going to decide their cases.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That having both sides of that. I as a circuit judge, you were a circuit judge for several years. As a circuit judge, you would from time to time, I'm presuming, be asked to go out and actually witness something or look at something, right?
Well.
Or did it not very? No, I guess I'm thinking back to the the reason I'm thinking about it. Lance Ito going to O.J. Simpson's house, or something like that.
Well, okay, you know? You can have a. I mean, if the parties want evidence taken in that way, where you have a viewing of the site, this is something that is possible, but it's rare.
Yeah.
So, you can take the jury out there, but it's part of the evidence in the case when you do it. So it is only the evidence that's legally admitted in the case, and so the rules of evidence apply. So it's important that
it's kind of difficult to keep if the rules of evidence are apply, which they have to. It would be kind of difficult to me as a judge to be able to keep a juror from actually seeing something they or may not be supposed to see.
It's getting more difficult in the age of social media.
Really?
And so that is something that courts are struggling with how to get a grip on, keeping jurors from doing their own research. You know, when everyone has access to the internet at all times.
Yeah. And they can do a Google search on something.
They do all kinds of things, and so it makes it more difficult to keep a grip on it. So our system is designed for people to keep their word and to not do what they're asked not to do.
Yeah.
So we are confined to the rules of evidence for good reasons.
Sure. I asked you a little bit ago about the what you found best and most fulfilling when in your days as an attorney. What do you find most fulfilling and best, and is it different as a judge? You basically, as a judge, you have to, as an attorney, you're an advocate. As a judge, you can't advocate anymore, can you?
No. And I can tell you my experience as a trial judge, and this is part of what I miss as a trial judge, is the feeling that you go home at night feeling like you've helped people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people bring their disputes, and this is often the case with pro se people, that you can hear both sides of a controversy and patiently hear both sides out, and that you can make a ruling or suggestions that they can even both accept and walk away feeling like not only was our case heard, we had a conclusion.
Able to change somebody.
That actually solved a problem.
Yeah.
And sometimes just a little patience and insight, where people can't talk to each other, they can talk to a neutral observer, and a judge often is able to accomplish those things. So I would say that the courtroom is the place where chaos meets order.
Really?
And the chaos of the world and conflicts come together in a place where we have rules of decorum, order, and we have an appointed magistrate that decides what is the appropriate disposition of this conflict.
Or
chaotic situation.
Tell me, then, whenever you would make a suggestion, did you often? I guess my question is, how often would people abide by a suggestion as opposed to, say, a ruling?
Because if
you make a suggestion to somebody, say you've got a divorce court or something going mm-hmm. on, you know, you make a suggestion, you know, you might want to be a little bit nicer here and give this part of property.
Well,
or
divorce
something
court
like.
Is not the easiest place to
I
get that done.
Suspect
but
it's not.
But let me say that I'll give you an example of a place where I felt like I was accomplishing, two places that I know that I accomplished things in this way.
Yeah.
One of them was order protections. I would sometimes hear as many as 15 or 20 in one day.
You're kidding. I didn't realize there were that many.
In Williamson County, we have heavy dockets. And so I would say more than half the time or two-thirds of the time, I would be able to look at a situation, hear both sides, see what was being alleged and what the response was. And
couldn't you tell?
And I could usually tell what was going on, and I could simply talk to them and make suggestions, and they would come to an agreement about how this situation should be handled. Often it involved walking away without an order having to be entered.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was accomplishing conflict resolution. And I was bringing help to these people that could not talk to each other, but they both could talk to me, and they would walk away feeling better. And they had a resolution. Okay, we're going to agree to do this. We can't live together anymore, but we can at least not scream and
live in the same. We can at least live in the same world
or
same town.
In some kind of situations, you'd look at, say, an ex paramour type of relationship.
Right.
And one party didn't want it to be over. Yeah. And I would look at the other party and say, have we gotten an idea here? Look where we are.
It's over.
The fact that you are here may give you a hint
that
they really don't
me.
Want you to come around anymore. And so often they would agree to things that, you know, I could keep jurisdiction of the case in case there was more trouble. And usually that would solve it.
Well, that's one. Order protection was one area. You said there was another.
And the other, another one would be, and this is one that was really closest to my heart, with children.
Yeah.
And all the experience I have, I really appreciated the work I did in juvenile court, which I handled for 5 years. And I was able to see many successful outcomes. And over time, I think it just kept getting better because we were able to train the CASA advocates. I was a big supporter of CASA. And that's court-appointed special advocates.
Right.
I would go talk to them and explain to them what their role was and how they could make a difference, how they should look at their role in the system and what they were about and what was good, and talk about different types of situations. And it just seemed like our CASA program just kept getting better and better.
See, now that seems like to me probably maybe one of the best parts of you being the being a judge would be you can actually see the help you're doing.
Yes.
With kids right there.
Yes.
Tell me how I
have people to even to this day, I have people coming up to me thanking me that, you know, I didn't realize that the far ranging implications that, you know, I'm hearing about even today that I've the decisions I made 4 or 5 years ago.
You may not even recall.
I don't remember. Yes, and because we would do, you know,
you're doing 20
hundreds
a day.
Of cases, and I just did my best. I applied myself diligently and vigorously, and applied all the knowledge and experience that I had. And
of both the judge, the circuit court judgeship, and the kids court judge, have you been able to take into your job as the appellate?
Oh, I think all that experience is so important because all your life experience as a human being and all the different places you've been, things you've been through, mm-hmm. people you've met, mm-hmm. you bring an understanding.
Right.
You bring life experience and you bring understanding to a situation. And if you've been there,
yeah.
If you've been there from the first client's interview to fighting it, you know, to drafting the pleadings, to being involved in the discovery process, to taking it all the way through to jury verdict and defending it on appeal, then you have an appreciation for what it is before you. And then you've been the trial judge, so you understand the perspective of the trial judge and how he has to make decisions quickly. In the appellate court, we have the luxury of having detailed, lengthy arguments about the law. The trial judge does not have that benefit.
Yeah.
And but the trial judge has the benefit of insight, seeing the witnesses, and so they get great deference in their decisions that have to do with different standards of review, such as abuse of discretion and manifest weight of the evidence. And so the trial judge gets all that benefit of the doubt in those decisions that have to do with his seeing and hearing the witnesses and weighing the evidence. And so it often is a very deferential standard of view. And by deferential, I mean you defer to the trial judge's decision on how he decided issues of credibility.
Because he knows a little bit more about the particulars.
He could see and he could hear and he had insight. He gets the benefit of the insights that he brought as a trial judge to the case.
Your election is this November. You've been going all around your district, all around the 5th district. What are you finding from the people you're seeing? Have you met anybody or have you seen things that you didn't know were out there? Because you've been kind of locked into the 9 counties for a while until this election. What are you seeing in Madison County or St. Clair County that you didn't expect? And Wayne County.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of people I like.
Yeah?
I just enjoy people, and I enjoy always meeting new people. And I think Southern Illinois is a beautiful place, and its people are a great, wonderful asset, and we have a rich wonderful history here in Southern Illinois. And the other thing that I'm seeing is a lot of economic distress and hurt. And I have an understanding about that, and I wish I could make it better, but that's not my job as a judge.
It's not your job as a judge, but having an understanding of it is key to your job as a
judge. It is. You know, so many people have a hard time making ends meet, and I appreciate that. I see that even in my own kids' lives and their difficulties and their issues in trying to raise their own kids and live their lives. And I see it out there in the difficulties of people losing their jobs and not knowing how to turn. I majored in economics, so I sometimes I wish I weren't.
You wish you could help
running
them.
For judge, and I could offer solutions there, but I'm not. So I confine myself to the issues that are before a judge, and not running. It's important that judges understand they are not legislators, and I believe judges should confine themselves to the Constitution. And I am a judge that actually
I'm going to kick you out here in a minute, Randy.
Okay, respects the Constitution. I will also want to say, I'm asking for their vote. Asking you for your vote.
That's Randy Moore. Appreciate you coming up here. Appreciate you sitting in for a while.
Thank you, Bruce.
That's Bruce
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. That's Bruce Dickey's show for today.